Blog Talk Radio.
Something tells me that you're the kind of guy that I should make a move on.
I get exotic with the melodic tune. I get hypnotic with the moon, but you got to put me down soon. I flip a shot show if you come my way. Up, down, and around, even sideways. I'm about as ready as the light can get. We can go all out. I ain't afraid of the sweat, but yet I bet you got the techniques to freak a girl inside out. What's that all about? Can I have some of that? You gotta put me on. Word around town is you're 9 men strong. I wanna be put on in the worst way. Since the first day, I think it was a Thursday. You be that brother that I wanna.
You are listening to the 30 Plus WTF Show. Malika.
I like the way you be with all that personality, but I got flavor too. You need to go with me.
Hey, good evening. This is Malika and Brittany here. We are the 30 Plus WTF Show, where we talk about what is necessary. Hey, Brittany. Miss Brittany. You on mute. Hey, Brittany.
You had me on mute. That's why you couldn't hear me talking. She muted me, y'all.
God.
She don't trust what I'm going to say. She don't know what I'm going to say now.
I'm scared.
No, how you doing?
I am amazing, girl. So happy you're back with us.
Well, thank
you.
Got to
tell us about the deliciousness of the Dominican.
Oh, God,
in the show.
It was so good. It was wonderful. It was
all right,
wonderful. I didn't want to leave. So
I know you didn't. I saw the pictures
right.
on Facebook. I was like, she ain't coming back.
I really thought about it. I was going to the front desk like, can I stay a couple more days? Like, I thought about really staying. I'm over
it.
I'm ready to move.
I don't blame you. Let's get our resident community activist on. Mr. Lonnie is back with us. He's an exciting co-host who brings much knowledge every time that he's on, and we're happy to have him with us. Hey, Lonnie.
Hey, ladies. How are you?
Great.
Good. Hey, Lonnie.
Really, really good to hang out with you guys again. This should be more than interesting. I'm also kind of anticipating Brittany's question of the day because I kind of missed it last week, and she usually hits you over the head with a stick to start the show.
Wait
so,
a minute. I sent y'all a question last week, though.
Well, I actually
he
saw
did.
That question.
I did
see that question.
And I asked
question.
It on air.
Right. And she did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but there
yes,
wasn't a surprise. Yeah, I like the surprise of Brittany going, and what do you think about this?
Here you go, putting me on the spot.
That's
I was sitting here trying to recuperate.
Right. Well, you had enough sunshine. Sunshine, you know, it invigorates people.
I know it does. I got enough vitamin D for, you know, a while. But I'm
you
good.
Do know, you do know that African Americans need more vitamin D. You do know that, right?
I do. And it was so funny. My doctor, I started taking it like 3 months ago, and my doctor was like, okay, you have enough. You need to stop taking it. I was like, I feel great. What do you mean I have too much? So, yeah, she was like, you've taken too much of it. I said, that
is so wrong. Well, let me OD on it, shoot. I want OD.
Right. She was like, your levels are near toxic. I was like, but wait a minute. I feel better than ever. What do you mean you're near toxic? I didn't get it.
Western medicine doesn't have all the answers. So.
That's what I said. So I'm just going to cut back. I'm not going to stop because
right,
I felt
exactly.
great.
Exactly.
I said I'll come back to make her feel better, but I feel great. And she's black, so I'm okay.
That's probably,
Yeah.
So what else happened down there? What did you do down there?
You know what? I went on a day-long tour. I got to see The closest city to the resort we were in, I got to see the open market. I got to see, I rode a horse on the ocean. I went to someone's house, a typical house. We got to see where they were growing. I said, all I need is this. This woman's house, she grew the cocoa plant in her backyard, bananas, pineapple, mangoes, cherries. I was like, I'm good. I could just stay here.
Right.
What are you talking about? You know? So it was beautiful to see, but I'm realizing that most of the islands in the Caribbean are pretty much the same. It's just if they speak Spanish or French or, you know what I mean? So this, you know, the Dominican, they speak Spanish. And I was working on my Spanish when I was there. Hola, mi amigos in the Dominican. Hola. I had a wonderful time.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
But what's really interesting is when you go to the Caribbean, you get to see the Africanism in us. We still grow things. We eat in a different way. It's a powerful thing. You know, I get in trouble because I think that Africans talk the whole world about being merchants and growing things and having their own businesses. And then it seems like we got into a big memory lapse somewhere in this 500 years, but we'll talk about that with our guest as he shows up tonight. So.
Right. Everybody looked like everybody I know. God thought that was interesting. So it was like, hey, how you doing? Hola. And it was like family. So everybody spoke. It was just love. And I'm ready to go back.
Wow. So I know while you were laying out there on the beach, you were thinking of some thought-provoking, one of those what's on Britney's mind type of question.
What is on Britney's mind? You know, it was so funny. I had a question, and then it kind of went out of my mind because I think some Anglo tried to get me sick on the plane on the way back here. So now I have, like, this sinus thing. I had to take some sinus medicine. I was like, oh, I can barely breathe. Why is this happening? But I was thinking about, like, last week I was talking, I had asked you all about decompressing. And so this week I wanted to know, like, about what do you think about doing for the earth? Like, what do you think about your place in with all this stuff going on, because I saw it like second and third hand with what happened last week because I wasn't here, right? Or 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, like, what in my little space, in my little area, can I do to make this world better? And I know that's what we talk about all the time, and I was thinking, I was like, what the only thing I can do is spread the love that I have, to show the love that I have for myself, for everybody else, because it comes down to, I think, Lonnie, you said this a couple weeks ago, that it comes down to love and, like, what can you do to perpetuate that instead of everything else?
You know, I want to jump in on this.
Yes, sir. Jump in.
We before we get kind of confused, live in a traditional way. You know, there's tribes in Africa who, when the grass bent over and the grass stayed laying down, they would literally move their huts because they knew they had damaged Mother Earth by walking too much, and the grass had bent over, so they knew that was their signal to move their huts to a different area. I think the greatest thing that all African Americans especially can do for the earth is live like we really are connected to the earth again, because we have an innate understanding on how to do things. You know, we really do know that we don't belong in McDonald's. It's just that prices and stuff drive us to places like that, and it's kind of a systematic murder of us. But if we grow things in our little backyards, you know, my grandmother grew all kinds of stuff right in our backyard on Oakland Court, and over and over and over and over again, we ate fresh, good things, and we just seem to have forgotten it. So if I was to say anything I could do is I need to start a small garden, and I need to talk 10 people into starting a small garden.
I like it. I like the garden thing. And that's so funny you mentioned that, because I've been reading about, like, foods we should be eating and how our bodies should be more alkaline than acidic.
Yeah.
Right, and that a lot of stuff we eat is acidic, which causes all these issues and problems we have. And how even food that we think is good is not really good, like, pineapples are not really good for you because of some of the makeup in it. I'm not a doctor, and what I'm saying is, like, I'm trying to read up more on and learn about stuff that's really good and what's not good. So I love it. I love the thing about the garden. I hate dogs, but, I mean, maybe I should start a garden.
Real quick sidebar on bugs. A good three-quarters of the bumblebees in the world have died from different poisons. And what they're starting to realize now is that if the bee itself dies, there may be a chance that humanness would become extinct because of the bee's ability to pollinate things. So don't hate bugs.
You know,
your problem's people.
So Malika, what
can
you do in your own little space to perpetuate love? Well, what are you doing?
Love. What am I doing to perpetuate
love?
Yeah. Well, I think the show is one.
Yes.
Is one way.
I totally agree.
I I think since I was a kid, I love all people, all different cultural backgrounds, but of course, you know, black men, black women, that's my heart and soul. And if when I see us in any sort of turmoil, pain, ever since I was a kid, I've always just wished I could just do something to just make everybody all right and comfort them. And, realizing, I'm not God. I don't have that power to just comfort and make everybody all right. I just do what I can with this medium, with this vehicle, with the articles I write, going out, volunteering, doing whatever I can. If I could just comfort one person that's in pain, then if I know that they're all right, then I feel all right, that they're all right. So that's my love contribution to the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? We're all connected. This is what I'm coming to. You know, we're all connected. And the more you realize that, the more I travel, the more I realize that we're all connected.
What are cells of the body? You're right, Brittany. 100%. What are cells of the body? And the body is the earth, and, we're the things that are moving around on. You're dead right.
Right.
You know, I just want to add that maybe the most severe thing people could do is love themselves. If you love yourself, you're going to love others.
Right. That's so true.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Well, let's get our guests.
Was that good enough for y'all? Was that okay for y'all?
Yes.
That was hot. You know what you're doing.
You bring the question. And you all next Monday is the Brittany segment. She's going to be hitting us for a full hour. What's on Brittany's mind?
Oh Lord!
It's going to be.
I don't know if y'all are ready for my whole mind all day. Okay.
Girl, I'm going to have my glass of wine ready. I'm going to be ready for that one.
Get your wine out. Get your wine.
I'm going to be ready. But, let's get our guest on tonight. Actually, our special guest co-host from last week, Ms. Delphine Cherry, co-chair of the Brady Campaign, she sent me a message and was like, I'm on. And I'm like, all right now, hey now. So I know she has a lot to contribute to tonight's conversation. So let's get Ms. Delphine Cherry on. Delphine, you on?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
I'm Oe.
Yes.
Hello.
Brittany. Hi, Lonnie.
Hi.
Hi, darling. How are you?
I'm okay. Okay. You was just talking about bees, and unfortunately, last Saturday, I was stung by one.
Oh, no.
Brought me to the emergency room, and all kind of crazy stuff went on with that one. So I'm not liking bugs right now.
You got two anti-bug people here.
Right.
Three.
I know
three
that they're useful. I know they're useful, and I know bees are useful. I just don't like them. I mean, you know.
Well,
you know,
I had a lot of reactions.
I want to scare you three women for a minute. Human beings think they run the earth. No, and I don't want you guys to be scared, but the true owners of the earth are insects. Everybody else
okay.
is just
right.
in their way.
All right. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to learn to stay out of their way.
Right.
Let's get our guest on tonight. We want to respect his time. I was so happy to get his time tonight. A friend of mine, Eric Muhammad, many of you may know of him, especially in this area, in Chicago. I ran into him a few weeks ago at the Bronzeville Art Gallery on the south side of Chicago, where they were featuring Faces Not Forgotten. And actually, I met Delphine Cherry, who's lost two children to gun violence. I met her at another Faces Not Forgotten event. And, you know, such a powerful show, because it features paintings of actual children who have been gunned down in cities like Chicago and St. Louis. I mean, actually, it's picking up momentum in its track around the country. And, you know, if ever it's in your area, I highly advise people to go check it out. But I ran into Brother Eric at the one in Bronzeville, and, you know, I asked him, I said, so what's the nation doing with all this gun violence, all this black-on-black crime? Like, what are you all doing? And he said, well, we're building conflict resolution centers. And I said, okay, what is that? And he said, Malika, you know, it's powerful. It's really successful in Atlanta. It started, I believe he said it started in Atlanta. Our guest can correct me on that tonight. But he said it is, you know, making strides in Atlanta and New Orleans, and they're working on building one here in Chicago. And it just sounded so just fascinating to me, and it sounded like a real solution, like they're bringing young men together and women together to resolve their conflicts so, you know, we can stop the violence, stop the bloodshed. And I wanted to hear more, and so I invited Eric to come on to the show, but Eric was like, no, you know what? The best person to come on is a person that is actually traveling the country and helping to put these centers up, and that's Brother Jeffrey Muhammad. And he said, I'm going to get you in touch with him. He made it happen, and I spoke with Brother Jeffrey, and I was just really impressed with the work that they're doing, and I really think that it is a solution. It's definitely a start of a solution here in Chicago, and I can't wait for that center to be put up here. Brother Jeffrey is the assistant minister to Minister Ishmael Muhammad, who many of you know is son to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I've gone to hear Brother Minister Ishmael speak many, many times, and has definitely moved me. And, you know, so I know Brother Jeffrey is he's a student to Minister Ishmael, so I know he's going to be bringing a lot of information for us tonight. And I know we all have been so thirsty, so yearning for a solution to what's going on in Chicago with all this gun violence. And I'm happy that we have with us tonight and honored to have his time, because he's a very, very busy man. Brother Jeffrey Muhammad, welcome to the show, Brother Jeffrey.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum to you and to your guests. And thank you so much for allowing us to be on the show. I was honored and deeply humbled by your introduction, and hope I can live up to a percentage of what you just said.
Malika is the queen of introductions, and she's always accurate. So I know that you will far exceed this introduction. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you, my brother, for being here.
It's my honor, my pleasure.
Yes, yes. Brother Jeffrey, tell us about these conflict resolution centers. I mean, what happens when we bring two young men who are at war with one another? What happens when they come to this center?
Well, the beauty of the centers is really the work at the FOI, which are called the Fruit of Islam, have been doing since its inception in 1930. But on 10-10, last 15, on the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March, Minister Farrakhan made a clarion call for all men to participate and use the biblical scripture of Jesus returning with at the head of 10,000. And he said, we're living in a time that we 10,000 fearless men, and later he said, fearless men and women, because we know the women in our community have always been fearless and been our leaders. But he said it was time for the men to stand up and stand in between the guns, the knives, and these young men, and to help bring their conflict, help them to resolve it. So what we do is, we involve ourselves in those neighborhoods where the crime rate is the highest, especially in terms of violent crimes. And we know that the anger of the black male is systemic, psychological, and to a degree medicinal. But that the anger that is in that young black man is much deeper than just having a beef, as the street would say it, with his brother. It begins it begins with self-hatred and low self-esteem and black inferiority, which is systemic of a white supremacist system. If I look in the mirror and I don't like who I am, it's easy for me to disrespect and dislike anyone that looks like me. Now, I'm going to give you all an example, and I want you to be as honest as you can internally. Don't say anything. But think of the times when we were young and we went to the mall, and the mall was crowded. When you're at the mall with all black people, do you avoid people or do you tense your shoulders and brace for somebody to bump you? Now, if you go to the white mall, did you find yourself moving out of the way for them more than they moved out of the way for you? If so, then you know in our neighborhood, we didn't respect each other enough for space, but going into their space, we respected their space enough that they could engage ours and we would move. So what we do with these young men is sit them at the table and first try to find out what their main issue is. And let's say in Chicago where the murder rate is very high and the blood spill is very deep. So it's difficult to tell a brother that his real brother just got killed not to retaliate to a man that just killed his own flesh and blood. So what we do is try to, and we're a very avant-garde, so this might be very shocking to some. If we're dealing with the street organization, we first introduce them to a higher power, which is God. We let them know that they are from God and they are a part of God, and as Jesus said, you're all gods, children of the Most High God. So, or as David said, excuse me, then we start on that premise, and we ask them, do you want peace? Not necessarily justice, but do you want peace? If both sides say yes, we say, are you, who has the last murder? And if the BD say, we do, and you got vice on the other side, if you want peace, are you willing to send the murderer to the other side? And if you are, will you be willing to accept the murderer and draw peace? And if that group says we're willing to send one of our men that committed that murder for the whole of the group, it becomes very magnetic to the other side to say you're willing to send us, one of your soldiers, for peace. Instantly, you find peace because they know that the one is not greater than the whole, but they're willing to make a sacrifice for the greater good. that conversation has never failed us in the past 60 years. But when they're not gang-related and you find just anger, it gets even worse because the person really is not angry at the other person. They're really mad at their own loss of life, bad education, no money, no job, bad home life, and powerlessness. So it means nothing to a young man to take out his frustration, forgive my language, on another nigger because a nigger is devalued in this society. And a nigger is the value is less than that of a dog. So you can beat a dog, but you can kill a black man on the street. So we have to lift their self-esteem to the degree that they can respect their own blackness. When they respect their own blackness, their young brothers, they still have conflict, but they find more value in life, and they're less likely to take a life than they are when they have no value.
Well, well, well. It feels like I've come home. I don't even know if I'm supposed to be the first question. And,
go ahead. Can I ask the first question? Revolution Center is also part of the Restore to Justice?
Pardon me?
Is it a part of the Restore to Justice program?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Well, yeah, I said that because, you know, I used to be a former probation officer, and we do have Restore to Justice programs in Illinois, well, in Chicago. I don't see them working. Well, I can't say I don't see them working because I was only at a couple of them where that they didn't want to talk. They wanted to keep the beef up afterwards. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I do like
Absolutely.
Your approach. I do like your approach when you put God first and then you hold the conversation. I used to facilitate groups with young men, youth, and try to figure out, you know, what was the problem. And you're right. It's the home life. It's the frustrations of not having a job and mom and dad might be on drugs. But that, to me, doesn't give you the right to go take somebody else's life because you're angry.
That's correct. That's correct.
It brought me back to my son. It brought me back to my son's life. You know, he had a mother that cared about him.
Was there a question there?
Is a Restore to Justice or the conflict resolution that you guys are building, is that going to help? You know what I mean? Is it going to be one center or is it going to be many centers?
We're going to try to build as many centers as possible and build coalitions with folk that are experts in restorative justice, peacemaking process, and anyone that has a genuine love for their community. We want to partner with them because the one key thing it is to bring peace to these beasts, you got to love these young men. And
they're missing
so much love. And we do work with some of the probation officers here. They find certain people in caseloads, they call me. But Jeffrey, can you sit and talk with this young man? He's just wilding out. And the anger is so intense that you got to cut through that anger because they really don't want to fight and they really don't want to kill. But that's the ultimate end of the frustration and disappointment and dissatisfaction. And let me tell you, many of our
I want to kind of try to add something because what you said rang so true to me. And, you know, I've kind of been working with young men for 40-something years. But what you said about they're trying to literally kill the thing inside themselves that they don't like. And, you know, one of the things that this country does a real good job of, it doesn't realize that it spent almost four generations literally dismantling the model of black manhood. So what happens is these kids, the very thing that you need to allow them to have, because all people need models, no matter what we think, in the end, we're all models of the people who raised us or did something to us by religion, by faith, all that. In the end, it's the people who touched you while you were growing which helped turn the clay into a man or a woman. And what the honorable minister said right there was really powerful because what has happened is the picture of blackness is less valuable. Black communities are less valuable. So what happens is people who come from less value see less value in them very in themselves. And what you're killing is the thing you hate about yourself. And until we understand that this you know, this is why I think the concept is great, because you allow black people to understand this is about identity. We've literally mm-hmm. lived in a European mindset identity forever, and it's made us see blackness as something that's negative, and we're trying to hurt it and kick it out of ourselves. When we shoot each other and everything else, that's what we're doing. So I'm gonna ask this question. You're trying to get it started in Chicago. How can we help?
Well, we meet on Wednesdays as a coalition. We actually go into the streets. We have targeted a certain area in Chicago with the highest crime rate. We've been there every Friday. We're going to partner with Father Flager, and we're going to partner with some other pastors where we can first establish safe zones. In those safe zones, we're going to challenge churches and then buy property to establish safe houses. Now, Chicago looks different than the other six because Chicago is so strong in terms of gang, and Chicago has a history where brothers and sisters on the west side passed on from family lore. You got folk on the west side of Chicago that never come to the south side of Chicago. They'll go out of town, they'll go to a different part of the country, but will not come to the south side of Chicago. And they're not gang affiliated. It's just ingrained in them. I'm not passing Western. And those on the south side of Chicago don't pass Western going east. Now, this is a misnomer in Chicago. When folks say they live on the south side, really the east side of Chicago. South side of Chicago leaves Chicago. So even the territory that we call, that we live at, are wrong and they're false. So for the east, so black people say it's south. White people call it east. But it's really targeted that we're living in our own ignorance and we're living on the side of town that doesn't even exist, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. But we're mm-hmm. looking to partner with like-minded people that know what it is. They just got a basic, you love these young men and you're willing to spend time with them. That's the key. And there's one term that I think that we really have to study. Our young men and young women feel abandoned. And Minister Farrakhan mm-hmm. said that the worst feeling any human being can have is the feeling of abandonment. And what I mean by abandonment is not a traditional sense where we put them out, but in a sense where we have to work several jobs, we have our own personal life, and our children are left to rear themselves. And we think we're mm-hmm. giving them freedom, but they're really alone in a world much bigger than our world is, and they're trying to figure it out, and they don't have a support system to figure it out. They feel very abandoned. And when you're abandoned, your self-esteem and your security level drops. And in your insecurity, you'll incline towards anything of strength. You find a bunch of six or seven brothers that appear to be strong, you hang with them. They have pistols. Mm-hmm. You find strength in it, because you've never saw strength in your house. And I'm sure, as my sisters on the line know, when we grew up, it was a no-brainer and a no option. Every Sunday, you're going to church. No option, no discussion. You're getting up, you're dressing, you go to church. Ask most of your friends how many of them take their children to church. Most will say they don't. So there's not even a connection to God anymore that we naturally were forced to have, whether we wanted it or not. We saw a community at least two or three times a week, because most of our parents or grandparents not only went to church but was a part of something, usher board, choir, something. Mm-hmm. So we were always part of a bigger community serving a higher purpose. Mm-hmm. Our babies don't see that. They only see what they see on TV. And now the internet and their phones, mm. and Lord knows what they're watching on the phones in the room, and we're not seeing.
Right. Mm.
My question is, you talk about love and self-love, and some friends of mine and I were talking about the whole idea of the family structure
And how do you feel about the whole idea that, the whole family structure really broke down with the introduction of crack and the whole idea that, there are generations of kids that don't know their family or that have family on drugs, like they never saw parts of their family without a drug problem. How important or how do you think that has contributed to this whole idea of raising themselves and self love and all those types of things? Because, you know, before the introduction of cheap drugs like crack and stuff, like in the 70s, you might have had the one family member or two, but there are generations at this point that have never seen, like, some parents or some family members without drugs. Like, how important do you think that whole drug introduction was to this whole problem?
I think the drug problem continued an already existing problem. The black family has been non-existent in America. Our so-called slavery destroyed black families when we were not allowed to marry or choose the woman or man of our choice. We were forced to become breeders, and our children were sold, and our wives and husbands were sold. Slave masters refused to marry us. Our moral decline began with that. We were forced to marry who we wanted, but then we were forced to have sex with women outside of wedlock. It started the degeneration of a man that had to watch his wife beat, his wife raped, his daughter beat, and his daughter raped. It emasculated a man to know that at any night somebody can come and take my wife. So it ended a strong black man, and it's put our sisters in a position of having to be very manly in protecting their children because the man knew he would die if he went to fight for his very wife. So coming out of slavery, there's an emasculated man trying to take over a family where the woman at this point does not have a lot of respect. So even though she loves him, she still feels you should have just died versus letting him do what you did. Now you got the introduction of alcohol, the introduction of heroin. And if we do our research, the heroin and cocaine epidemic in the 20s and 30s was stronger than it was in the 70s and 80s. It's just not as well documented. But with the onset of, heroin coming back and crack coming in, that was reintroduced right after the radical 60s, when they saw us having self-love and a black power movement, they introduced the drug again, which caused us to become very leisurely. And as you say, now you have not only the mental deterioration, but you got a physical deterioration and an economic deterioration that our babies were forced to be raised in a house with a mother who was forced to have two or three jobs. So children, and very immature children, are raising themselves, raising each other, and we move from very nice homes into apartments, condos, townhomes. Now you got neighbors not across the yard, but right next door. So the rate for molestation increased, abuse increased, cohabitation of children increased because there was no one there to naturally protect. So that drug epidemic further caused the decline of family and devastated our families, and we still have not recovered from it. So I agree with you 100%.
Okay.
Brother Jeffrey, I've actually had a few black men engage in some heated debates with women, with black women, stating there's so many single black mothers because all the responsibility is really on the black woman because she chooses black men who will leave, who will not take on their responsibility. And I was like, wait a minute, how did it all fall on us? I've seen it just blow up on social media, these kind of discussions. I actually had a male friend tell me that too. He feels that. He feels that we choose these men, so we deserve what we get. We deserve to be single mothers because we choose certain men. What do you think of that? What's your take on that?
Well, I wouldn't call him my friend anymore. If I were you, that's not a friend.
Wow.
I couldn't call that man a friend because I'm going to say this very frankly, he's quite stupid. To say that as a grown man, that a woman chooses in her right mind to be with a liar. So the minister coins it like this. He says, there's no such thing as a no good woman. Minister says, all no good women were made no good by a no good man. So women that seem to fall in that category have been lied to, cheated on, and abused by men that made promises that they never fulfilled. Now, their friends knew that that man was lying, but it's in the nature of a woman to believe a man that she has feelings for. It's not in her nature to always look at him with a skeptical eye. So she's going to give him herself, her trust, and we can misuse that and abuse it, and then we have the nerve to say it's your fault that you believe me and you should have considered my lie. It's a fool that can tell you that. And I'm saying when a man says that, he tells you to your face, I am great at lying. I do this for a living. And if you're dumb enough to keep falling for the lie, something's wrong with you. That's a credible lie.
Did you hit the nail on the head, brother? That's all I'm going to say because it ain't my turn for a question because my feet is boiling wanting to say something, but I'm going to wait.
And when men ask you that, sisters, ask men one question. Do you have a daughter? They're going to tell you no. Because men that have daughters, they will not give you that aspect. They realize with a little girl, you know what? Every time I see a man, it reminds me of what I used to do. So every time somebody looks at you, I know how I used to look at another female. Having a daughter gives you a different perspective on life. But when men say that to you, sisters, you tell them real quick, all women that are no good was made no good by a lying man. And tell them to prove that is not true.
Yes, sir. I'm going to write that down.
Your nature is not to lie. Y'all's nature is not to cheat. Y'all's nature is not to be backstabbers. You all have become that because of circumstances of bad men that have misused your trust. Daughters come from the womb adoring their fathers. Daughters that love their father will go to war for their father, and if you're not careful, they'll go to war with their mother. At least in their mind, they'll look at their mom, you better leave my dad alone. So the nature of the woman is to support and lean and incline to a man, not to abuse and lie to a man. That part we have been taught wrong about you all. Religion has helped destroy black women with the whole Eve that tricked Adam. That's one of the biggest lies that have ever been told. And that has subliminally made men to think that y'all are tricksters. There's no woman lied to Adam. And if he was dumb enough to believe that a snake could talk, how stupid was he? If he had a conversation with God, and God told Adam, don't eat of the tree. Not the woman. God told Adam, don't eat it. So how dare he say, God, she made me eat it. Now, I told you don't eat it. Don't blame her. You wanted to eat it the whole time. Now, we don't buy that story at all. In the Nation of Islam, we believe it's metaphorical for something totally different. But we don't put fault on no woman for man's fall. No woman can make a man fall. None. You can assist, but you can't make me fall. I choose to fall on my own. Now, I can make you fall because it's by your nature that you're inclined to trust me and you'll follow me because God has put a certain level of leadership in me. But y'all can't make us fall. We know what we're doing. We can play that game and act like we don't. But we don't let no men do that. We know what they're doing.
So, Brother Jeffrey, so these conflict resolution centers, do y'all deal with black men, black women? Can we come?
No, now I'll say this, and I'm glad we're laughing. The conflict between the woman and man is tougher to deal with than the man.
Oh, yeah.
Brothers will be more honest in their beef with each other. And at the end of a male beef, if you watch most black men that fight, they can get along within 24 hours.
Yeah, they can. It's true.
Females, if y'all get a fight, y'all hate each other for life.
Oh,
y'all, y'all have grudges out of this world. So when men and women fight, we can recover from the fight with the female in an hour and be okay. You all do not recover that fast because we have injured you more internally than we injured you externally. For us, we're more injured our pride, but we've injured your nature where you know something ain't right. I'm not going to allow that to happen again, but, oh, well, we blow it off. So to deal with that, it's hard to get that man to understand and accept that, man, you are crushing her when you believe you are defending yourself. You're killing her more. The more you defend yourself, the worse it gets. That's the hardest thing to get a black man with high pride to just stand down in an argument with a woman.
I want to jump in here because I've been kind of quiet and it's hard for me to be quiet. So I want to ask you a question. When we start talking about multi-generational trauma and you're starting to talk about people being injured over generations and generations, I understand the concept of the conflict center dealing with you know, immediate situations, but there's a mental health issue that goes on among black people. I always tell my grandfather's fear of the system was passed to my father, then it was passed to me. And whether I tried to or not, because I'm a man who has five daughters, so I understand why God gave me daughters, because he needed to make me understand the true power and the nature of things. But black men carry this generational trauma with them everywhere they go. You know, one of the things I was realizing is, you know, I hadn't been out driving in a while. I wasn't driving. Now, the only police department that ever made me cringe was when I saw the Skokie Police Department's car. As soon as I saw the car, I had a visceral reaction to seeing the car, the Skokie Police car. Now, that comes from me as a child understanding what going into Skokie meant, what it meant for the police going into Skokie. But here I am 50 years later, having the same exact reaction that I had when I was 16. So my question is when you talk about this conflict center, how are you going to make this conflict center deal with this multi-generational trauma? Because that's one of the real issues that everybody keeps skirting around is, and you know, people get mad at me because I say this, and they say, well, you should never say that in front of white people. Well, here's the thing. There was a lie told, and both sides of the lie are sick. The idea that white superiority it's a lie. So white people have lied to themselves, telling themselves that they're superior. At the same time, it's trying to tell black people that they're inferior. So both sides are nuts. Both sides have gone through some trauma. White folks just don't admit it, and you see it in black people. And so my question is, how do you deal with that multi-generational trauma?
That's a great verbiage that you use. It all stems from, and we got to bring you to the center because I like how you said that. It all stems from a lack of love of self and a proper knowledge of self. The more you learn of yourself, then you start to learn the history, not only of yourself, but of your people, the bad, the good. And you begin to learn historically how you got to the level, whether it's high or low, of where you are. And the more knowledge that you have, the greater understanding that you have of your condition. We can show that black people are victims of circumstances. And the lifestyles that we live have been produced not by choices, but by circumstances. What we think are choices are really only a few options that have been given to us. Our community does not have the availability to make choices. when choices have been limited to one or two options. That's not a choice. That's just giving you one way or another. Great white communities have multiple options of what they desire to do. We don't have that. So in dealing with the multi-generational, we have a piece that we call an auditing, where we have sessions with what we consider auditors. And we try to allow that person, through a process, they're able to go back into their subconscious and start to find where certain pains and traumas have started. Many times, my brother, those pains and traumas are started by an insignificant object that was present when trauma started. So many of us have got severe beatings from our mother. Let's say you got a good whooping from your mom, and there was, let's say, the Jeffersons on TV. Every time the Jeffersons come on, you don't even realize it. But subconsciously, you get sad, you start to cry, you start to remember, man, my mom beat the heck out of me one day. And people say, man, what brought that up? You say, I really don't know. Jefferson's song triggered it because it was the Jeffersons playing when you got it. And you can almost feel the pain of it, and you can't figure, man, where did this come from? I done got depressed all of a sudden. Well, I almost feel like I can feel it. So the soul and nature of the black man is so powerful. Many of us feel the trauma of what happened to us during slavery. We still feel the anguish of it, and it comes out. And wise white psychologists know that, so they have drugged the hell out of our babies for fear of retribution on them, so they keep them comatose, knowing that this psychological line has got just about the end of it. This generation's mental capacity cannot handle a white supremacist mentality. They will retaliate, and our young ones don't know why they're retaliating. But it's, as you said, generational, I'll use the term ghost, have now visited them, and they're fighting back, and they can't even tell you why. They haven't read any history books. They haven't viewed any Dr. King material. They haven't read anything on Malcolm X, but they'll go in the street, they'll picket, they'll protest, and never seen it before. It's being triggered from somewhere. So it's coming back to haunt the oppressor. So we have to be careful when we tell young folk peaceful violence or peaceful protest. There's no such thing as a peaceful protest. A protest is based on a violent activity that occurred. So if you're challenging me to be peaceful, you should have been peaceful in the first place. We wouldn't be forced to do what we're doing. So the violator can be violent, but the protester has to be peaceful. And you bring more police officers to make sure that I stay peaceful than you put police officers searching for the violator, which caused us to protest.
Right.
Hundreds of police officers prevent me from protesting, but 100 police officers don't go get the police officer that killed my brother. It's pitiful.
Right.
So the very tactic is off. You didn't use a SWAT team to get the man that killed Alton, but you use the SWAT teams to tell us to stay peaceful. We got to wait on the system. But as you saw the police in Dallas, they didn't wait on no system to kill that brother. They killed him. They didn't arrest him and bring him in and bring him before the court and find him guilty. They sent in a robotic bomb and killed him. That is my challenge to y'all. Did you ever see the bomb go off on TV?
No.
Have you ever heard them play? Have you heard any station yet show the boom from the bomb?
No.
Did you see any glass of any part of the building explode from this so-called bomb?
No.
And if it was a bomb and flesh and bone disintegrated, how come the wallet didn't burn up? How did the wallet and ID survive a bomb, but the human being didn't? Doesn't
right.
Take bird faster than flesh and bone? You always got to think something don't sound like the hijackers of a plane. The plane blows up, but they find the wallet with the ID.
Right.
600 people on the plane, and you automatically know that one ID was the terrorist. Not that that ID could have been sitting on the street for years. That ID that you found,
right.
You knew somebody on the plane, we fall for that. So I challenge and tell me where the boom was. I want to see glass explode. Show me on your highlights where the spark from a bomb. Now, unless you got these kind of bombs now that don't even explode and they only kill the human flesh, then we're really in trouble.
Mm,
if they
right.
got that kind of weapon, we're really in trouble because you can kill a man and ain't got to say nothing.
Mm.
Now, to me, that's cool.
Yeah, wow, that's deep, brother. That's deep.
That's gangbanging for me. That's hard for me to tell a little brother on the street. They killed your guy, don't kill. Well, look, the Dallas police went, killed him, and look at Louisiana. They killing everybody that kill a police officer. They ain't not arresting anybody. Mm-hmm. They're killing them. You kill us, we kill you. We kill y'all, take it to court.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's making the young men say something wrong. You don't arrest us. You kill us and then define our nation. So they're saying this young man was a member of the Nation of Islam. The thing, it doesn't work. Everybody knows that none of us in the Nation of Islam carry weapons. So we don't believe in carrying the gun. So to put that on us makes you look crazy. Because we don't believe in carrying weapons whatsoever. We forbid every member no weapons on your person and no weapons in your house. We don't carry.
Mm.
We believe the power of God is greater than the power of metal.
We're getting real deep here tonight, people.
I know. And the video of the young man in Baton Rouge, he recorded a video days before the shootout with the police. He said, "Do not affiliate me with any other group. This is me. This is what I did." But they're so trying to tie him into black organizations. That's what makes you think it's a setup. Okay, what's really going on? Why are y'all trying to tie these shooters to positive black organizations? It's just really interesting. And I did question, how come we didn't see any sort of glass or blow up or fire or any of that with the Dallas shooting? I questioned that. And everybody was like, well, it's high technology. I was like, oh, that's scary. That is very scary.
How high technology is that?
But see, it changed
right.
the narrative. You had the narrative of that young man and the young man in Minnesota. We watched live footage of these two brothers bleeding out in front of us. We watched a brother's girlfriend calmly take her boyfriend being shot. They knew they had to change that narrative so fast because there was no way they could have justified that. So all of a sudden, police officers are being shot. You don't hear of Alton or the other brother anymore. Their narrative is done with. All we're concentrating on now is the shooting of police officers. They found an effective way to bury those two stories. And I'm a Barack Obama fan. But he really pissed me off on this one, that he had the nerve to go down there and speak for the police officers, but he didn't fly to Minnesota, and he didn't fly to Louisiana to talk to the families yet. So I didn't appreciate that from him. You talk to the police, but you won't talk to the families that were blatantly killed. I didn't like that. If you're the president, go talk to black people sometimes. To the white families in San Francisco, he talked to the white families in New York. But he won't fly and talk to the black family.
He sure did. He talked to the families of the kids that were killed, right? He went to remember when the kids
Sandy
you
Hook.
You all know what I'm talking about.
Sandy Hook.
He went there, didn't he?
Yeah, he went there.
And then
flew them all
to the White House.
Oh wow.
It did. He hasn't met with the families, the black families yet. And I'm curious that he called him by phone private. But I didn't appreciate that. But the narrative is gone of the two brothers. They've been buried, and you're not going to see their narrative surface. And if it does surface, you're the police officer shot. Now, forget the movie that had Dustin Hoffman and Robert De Niro, Wag the Dog. Wag the Dog, show where America fabricated a war and hired a Hollywood producer to make commercials to lie about fabricating a war, and they filmed it in America just so the man could get elected again.
Oh.
It's a movie called Wacky
Dog.
I know the movie you're talking about.
I haven't seen it.
It's the president that hired Dustin Hoffman, who played a movie producer. They hired him to fabricate that a white soldier had been killed so that they could make everyone patriotic and vote for this president who justified bombing Somalia, and the Somalians had nothing to do with it. They shot him on a back road in Texas, but blamed it on an African country, and Somalia got bombed for it.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm like, baby, they changed the narrative. I don't believe this brother killed officers in Dallas. I don't believe this brother killed those police officers in Louisiana. That's just not us. We just don't do that type of stuff. We just don't start shooting police officers. I don't buy that. And if so, why didn't they keep them alive? That's a question.
Right.
They didn't want any questions.
Right.
They didn't want any questions.
That's true.
And because we're devalued, we'll believe it. We'll believe it so quick.
Go ahead, Brother Jeffrey.
I said, because we've devalued ourselves, we believe it so fast that we do wrong. See, that the violence of the country has produced the violence in these young men. So America is a war country that in its inception of its own revolution started with a gun. It has won every war by the gun. Every territory that it has, it took it by the gun. America highlights its criminals as heroes. So Al Capone is revered in Chicago. But you better not say any black gang leader's name. You can hear all
that's really powerful what you're saying. And I want to add a little something when you start talking about revering criminals. I live in Evanston, Illinois. Now, Evanston is named after the guy who did the Sandy Creek Massacre, who killed a bunch of Indians. You know, one of the largest sites of Indian massacre is right on, you know, by Evanston Hospital. People don't even know that the name of the town is really, it's celebrating someone who massacred some stuff. And what's really incredible that you said these things is that, you know, I try my best not to get angry because I think anger is an emotion that doesn't work. I think what happens to it, it gets dissipated in the wrong way. I'll end up in Statesville or somewhere else. So I've already tried to use my mind. But the when you start talking about drug use and things like that a little earlier, I was going to say that some of the smartest people I've ever met, I met in crack houses. I had an addiction for over 15 years. But you'll find some of the most inquisitive, bright, questioning people were in these drug houses. And what's crazy, what always was crazy to me is as if they aimed something at the very special people in our community when you start talking about the flooding the drugs, because an inquisitive mind searches for things and does things and experiments with things. And if all that was ever around were negative things, it goes without question what would happen. And I guess my next question to you is this. You know, my daughter grew up in a home that Brittany talked about. Now, what really was lucky is that I was different. And even in my addiction, I brought food home. I went to work. I did things no matter what. But you could see the damage that I brought with my addiction to my children.
Okay.
Now, I don't go back. I go back to my multi-generational thing because my mother was an alcoholic. And my grandfather had his own issues with alcohol. So in essence, what you just said to me, that this attack on us with this chemical attack on us has not happened only once. It's happened almost twice and maybe three times. And I guess once again, I'm getting back to your conflict center. I want to know, how do we take those sicknesses, those illnesses that are in our neighborhood and deal with them? Because I want us to deal with them. Because, see, I have a problem with the whole entire medical system coming to us to solve a problem that they created. It's like asking, the dog that bit me to stitch the wound. I got some issues with me. So
that's right.
I just want to know, how do we do that?
Well, it's systemic, and you first got to kill the desire for escapism. The person that's unfortunate that inclines to the drug is trying to escape from their reality. Their reality has gotten to the degree that they no longer want to face it or have the ability to cope. So we teach coping mechanisms. We strengthen their relationship with themselves, and we focus them on a higher power. We try to inculcate that the higher power gives a higher high in
any
drug than you can ingest.
We say you
focus on the most high, that's free. Focus on the cheap high is debilitating. So through our practices of cleaning up, our exercises, our daily devotions, our self-affirmations, and most importantly, our circle of love, we try to inject more love than heroin can put in your vein. And we believe that our love is much longer lasting than the high of heroin. Once we can get you to a level of balance, we then try to offer you change the environment which produces the dependency, get you out of that environment, not necessarily out of the neighborhood, but out of the environment of decay and out of the environment of those that don't believe they can make it. So we say hang with this group. They will help you to stay positively balanced. But if you go back with that group, either you're going to be strong enough to bring them up or they're going to be strong enough to bring you down. So we have them change the environment, change the mindset. The most important thing we try to do is for them to realize how much God loves them and that God will never leave them nor abandon them, and to lean on him. And we teach them, and we're not, even though we're Muslims, we're receptive no matter what the faith tradition is. It doesn't matter to us the name that you call God. As long as you believe he's most high, we're cool with whatever you say, but we try to force you to depend on him and him alone. And each of us know when you have called on God, God has never failed any of us. We failed him, he never failed us.
Amen.
That's true. That's true. I had a quick question about with – especially the young men. I was out of the country 2 weeks ago, and I realized that over where I was in the Dominican, they listen to all the American music, but it's all uncut. And so I did not realize that all these songs that I hear on the radio, they cut the word nigga out from like 15 to 25 times in one song. And how these songs are really about, you know, they're just negative. And how do you talk to them about the entertainment they pay attention to and how that is influencing them and cutting in on their self-love and that type of thing?
That's a tough one that has been even difficult for us because the beat is infectious.
Right, the beat is so good, and then the words are just wrong, you know?
We have relationships with most of the major artists, and they have told us that they wanted to do positive albums, to talk about the black experience. But those in the record business told them no. They would not finance it. They would not be paid for such and such album, but if they did two more albums like this, then they would allow them to do a righteous album. So they've been prohibited from doing positive albums, and they're well paid for continuing the mental abuse. So it's difficult to tell a brother, you know what, you're killing your neighborhood, and the man said, but they're paying me $2 million. That's a tough one. That's tough.
Yeah.
So we help on that one as well. And then the younger ones, as when we were younger, our parents didn't like our music, but our music wasn't as filthy as they culturally attacking them to tell them don't touch the music. I have to be honest with y'all, that one, we haven't done so well ourselves. That's a tough one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually started a petition a couple days ago on change.org called Stop Killing Black People, and it is directed at all the powers that be in the music industry, because I had a white woman tell me from across a parking lot, she told me, she said, look at them, listen to their music. Their own men don't even value them in their music. And it pissed me off, but then I got in the car, and I Love Coco was playing on a few stations all at the same time. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, this is being played in our young black male's minds over and right. over and over and over. And so I've been trying to get people to sign this petition so that we can try to get them to block them playing that kind of music. If they can block porn at that, then they can block music that's devaluing the black community and causing gun violence. You know, I won't say it's the main reason, but it's contributing to the violence.
Right.
And, you know, it's hard to even get people to even sign that petition because they love the music. And that speaks volumes about how we see ourselves, how we value ourselves, that you love a song that's making us look like we're not devaluing us. But, you know, it's a fight. I'm determined to keep it going no matter what. Delphine, you have a question before we let Brother Jeffrey go?
No, he's just been so interesting. I don't know if everything he said is true. I do want to be a part of that restorative justice. I would like to work with the females because I feel like the females also is part of the problem too, you know.
Yes. You're welcome to be with us.
And you said every Wednesday night.
Pardon me, we meet tomorrow. We meet on Wednesdays at 7:30 over at the school on the property. And on Fridays, we actually go into the neighborhood. We've targeted a certain neighborhood right now with the highest crime rate.
And that's Inglewood.
Pardon me?
Okay.
Is that Inglewood?
Well, no, Inglewood is not the highest. Believe it or not, Inglewood is not the highest crime area. The highest area with crime is in between 79th and Cottage, 79th and King Drive.
Whoa. That's where I grew up.
Yeah, but the newspapers highlight Inglewood, but Inglewood is not the area. So we did our statistics. We were like, okay, this is interesting. And it's not even close in terms of the crime rate, but Inglewood receives the highlight of it. And I think, like, this would be my conspiracy theory. I believe the University of Chicago really desires that Inglewood area and are trying to scare people to leave that area so they can buy their property and begin.
Look, I already know. Yes, they are.
They're doing the same thing in Everest.
Yeah.
So I think the media hyping that area because they want that area.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's what they do.
Brother
Muhammad, we want to thank you so much for joining us. We want to thank you. We would love to have you come and talk to us again. We really appreciate it. Again, you said you meet on Tuesdays and Fridays. That's correct?
Wednesdays. Then we go out on the street on Friday.
Right. Okay. And if someone out there listening would like some more information about helping and contributing to your Conflict Resolution Center, how can they contact you?
773-447-1457.
We will put that on our webpage so they can get in touch with you.
Okay.
And again, we cannot thank you enough for coming to talk to us.
Yes.
We appreciate your time and want to respect your time because we've gone over because you know, this is important.
So it's my
we do this all the time, but
it's my
it was worth every second. It was worth every second.
It was
yes,
worth
it was.
Every second. We so agree that we thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Jeffrey. Thank you.
I got to get going, but I want to say something. You know, there's a perfect wind being described and made in this world for us to make a change. And you know, I happen to see Ira Crothers and G-Lo Logan and Oliver Ruff and Reverend Neighbors, more really intellectual people talk at a school reunion here in my town. And I realize now that the power to make these changes exists inside of our communities. The problem is we have to get ourselves together and follow our leadership, and we'll come out of this. If we don't follow our own leadership, then we're in trouble. And, you know, I got to go. Malika, as usual, wonderful. Brittany, as usual, funny as heck. I almost said hell. I forgot I'm on a podcast. Delphine, every time I talk to you, it's powerful. I love you guys. I love being on this show. Let's do it again. The Brittany segment should be off the chain.
Thank you, guys. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Jeffrey. We appreciate you.
My honor. Let me know.
Whenever.
I'm available anytime y'all need me.
Okay.
Okay.
We will definitely have
you back.
Thank you all. God bless you.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brittany. Thank you, Lonnie.
Oh, thank you for coming on here and being with us today. We appreciate you.
Wait, look, I'm sitting at a meeting at my mayor, and I'm trying to do the radio station, and I'm sitting here with the mayor, and the mayor's like, who are you talking to? I'm like, myself. I was trying to be at two places at one time.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go handle your business with the mayor. I'm not mad
at
you.
That's okay. That's okay. It's over.
Oh, wow. Okay. Lonnie had to run as usual, Malika. What are you up to this week? Anything exciting? We're going to have to try and go down with this conflict thing. We're going to have to go to the Resolution Center.
In Midlothian, the conflict resolution, which as a probation officer, you had extensive studies in that.
Sure.
Trying to do solutions in order. Most of the time, the police officers would get a troubled youth and try to save them. Instead of sending them through the court system, they try to do the conflict resolution. That's the thing I like about it. They're not be put in system. You know, I like that part.
Right.
And
I definitely want to see what it's all about. I mean, I'm happy they have something like this because the way he described it, I mean, they need a place to come to let it all out. Like, why do you have this problem with this other young man? You know, let's talk it out. Use your words. You know, let's talk it out. And I love that.
Right.
And, you know, the Nation of Islam, you know, I studied Islam years ago in my 20s, and I mean, those men are so strong and powerful,
right.
So I know this can definitely diffuse that fire, that anger, and yes, I want to definitely come aboard and help in any way that I can. And I know Lonnie was doing some things. I wanted him to talk about some meetings he got coming up in the Evanston area for the Fifth Ward. But, you know, he can tell us about that later. And
a
friend of mine, Rubens, he's a well-known Haitian artist. He's got a Haitian benefit coming up in September. I'll give more details to that later. But I'll be host. He just asked me to host that show today. So I'm like, yes, definitely. You know, I'm down for whatever's going to help everybody, whatever's going to help everybody, I'm there. So that's what we got going. You got going on, Miss Brittany? Always busy.
I'm always busy, but I'm just got a little. I'm going to be vague like Malika usually is. I'm working on some stuff. I'll let y'all know when some stuff is, you know, coming to fruition. I got some. You know what? Really, let me start with this. I'm working on me. I'm trying to work on my insides and outsides.
Hey,
you know,
guys. I hate I have to cut this short,
right.
But I have to go.
No problem.
Enjoy you guys.
Go ahead, Delphine.
Okay,
go
ahead, honey.
We can go on forever.
Right?
Okay.
We can talk about forever. You take care. So, yeah, Malika, that was it. I'm working on me and then moving out from that. You know, getting my workout in, getting my health together, all that good stuff, you know. So,
okay.
But I'll let you know what else I got going on soon. Hopefully there's some good stuff coming. And thank you all, everybody out here, for listening. We appreciate you hanging with us as we talk over, as usual. Super powerful today. And it's really all about love. You know, like I'm starting, like we're talking about self-love. I'm starting with the self-love, with the health and the wellness for myself. You understand? So, everybody out there, and Malika, you have a wonderful week. I'll see you next week. Everybody else out here, be safe. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
This is the 30 Plus. What the fuck, man?
That you feel.